carrier reel 4. I'm a little bit surprised that the artillery did not itself have facilities for testing equipment which was designated for its use.
Well, the mechanization of artillery was responsibility of the Master General of Ordnance, and we, under his Directorate of Artillery, were responsible for fighting vehicle tests, and I think it perhaps natural that the one establishment was used to test all the sort of associated frontline vehicles.
Ah, I hadn't realized your establishment at Farnborough was part of the Directorate of Artillery.
Oh, yes. Yes, we were. Although we were attached to a tank battalion for administrative and accommodation, we were actually controlled by the Directorate of Artillery. We took all our orders from him.
Had the Directorate of Mechanization not been established at this stage?
No, he was. It was the Master General of Ordnance was at the head of the top of the tree. Then he had a Director of Artillery, number one, who did purely artillery, that is, gunnery and ammunition matters. And then a Director of Artillery, number two, who dealt with mechanization. And the mechanization, including tanks and artillery traction, and some first line infantry vehicles.
I see.
But of course, parallel with all this work which the Master General of Ordnance was doing, the Quartermaster General was not idle. And he developed his numerous multi-wheel drive vehicles, which were in the end to prove a pretty well universal tool as far as, except for fighting purposes.
Mm. You've told me quite a lot about specific tanks that went through your hands at this period. Could you tell me a bit about specific gun tractor vehicles?
Yes.
Give me a sort of evaluation of them based on your...
Yes, the Superintendent of Design in Woolwich Arsenal produced a thing called a Mark I Dragon. It had a Leyland engine and gearbox, a Vickers light tank tracks, and was the machine first used to equip the 9th Field Brigade, and it it was a machine that could do about 12 miles an hour, rather faster than the field gun liked at the time. But hard on its heels, of course, came the Armstrong Siddeley Dragon Mark II, which had the air-cooled standard 90-horsepower air-cooled engine and a layout similar to the experimental Armstrong Dragon, but utilising Vickers tracks and the steering end of the transmission. And that was made in fair numbers and used to equip both field and some medium artillery batteries.
And both these vehicles, both these versions of the Dragon, came through your hands at the Farnborough?
Oh, yes. Yes, and I used to, I took the Armstrong's Mark II Dragon down to Oakhampton to do them, to prove it for medium artillery.
Tell me about that.
Well, there was this problem, of course, of the 60-pounder gun, which was a hitherto horse-drawn. And we looked into the question of hauling it by some form of mechanical transport. And so we got a low-geared version of this Armstrong's Dragon and ran some trials at Farnborough and proved we could manage the thing on the road and that it could be hooked up and unhooked, and to ultimately to prove its acceptability, I took a team down to Okehampton, and there ran trials for the representative folk to prove that it was a workable proposition.
Tell me about the trials and how they went.
Well, Lou, I don't know if you know the artillery ranges at Okehampton, but there's a steep hill up from the station to the camp. We hauled a gun up there without much trouble. And then they selected a course, and they produced a 60-pounder with the horse team, and put me alongside with my 60-pounder and my Dragon. Well, the show started off by, of course, the horse-drawn people. They took their course in short spurts, would do a run, get so far, stop, give the horses a breather and go on. Well, that was very impressive to see that done. I hadn't seen it before. But on my side of the house, I chose a suitable gear which I knew would get me round the course and just went to it at a fairly slow speed. But of course, before very long, I'd overtaken and passed the horse team because I could keep going all the time.
Did you find that any of the sort of horsey people in the artillery were a little disenchanted by your success?
I think the boot slappers were a bit disenchanted. I think there were a lot of people who at that time, of course, were horse-minded. And I'm a bit of a horseman myself. I used to ride for amusement when I was at Farnborough. I think it was inbred in them, you know, that you can never get anything quite as good as a horse. And so there it was. But there was a lot of good-natured banter about it. And still, I had many good friends among the horsemen.
Could you give me any examples, either serious or humorous, of occasions when you came across this horse prejudice?
I can't myself call to mind any particular time when any man said any highly unpleasant thing one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the infantry transport vehicles? Were any interesting ones being developed that you
had
to work with?
You see, concurrently with our efforts in England, the French were doing a certain amount of work on cross-country tractors, and there was a man called Kigris, who had developed an India rubber track which he turned into a unit and made a half-track. Made a half-track tractor from it. It was actually a Citroën, one of the big Citroën cars, with two of these units in place of the rear wheels, and it enjoyed a certain amount of success in the Sahara. Well, he developed that, he brought it over to England and showed it to us. And he was in process of developing a larger unit. Well, we interested two firms in it. They're now defunct. One was Crossley Motors, and the other was a firm called Burford in North London. We bought a couple of these larger units from France and put them on two, one Crossley 1500 weight lorry and the other a Burford 1 ton truck. And We ran them about a Farnborough a bit. Well, ultimately, we had a comparative trial of all sorts of tractors and down at Wall. And sort of by way of something to do, I drove the Burford machine myself through that trial. But a number were purchased, but the six-wheeler overtook it.
Which types of machine took part in this trial, and which came out of it best?
Well, the Royal Army Service Corps produced the first Hartie tractor, spelled H-A-T-H-I, and is, I believe, the Hindu for elephant. This was a big four-wheel drive machine made by Thornycrofts. And it was a most impressive vehicle. We had that hauling it was in competition with our medium dragon, so that we must have been hauling 60-pounder guns between us. Then there were the half-track vehicles, and these small Citroën Kegress machines, they're sort of staff cars, they came across too. And let me see. Oh, I think, and was it Renault? Showed one of the first six-wheelers that they made in France. That was produced, the RASC had it at the time. And we had a good, a very representative demonstration of what machines could do and what they couldn't do, you know.
Which ones shone in these trials and which didn't do so well?
Well, I think the half-track machine showed up quite well overall. They were not, of course, up to the fully tracked machine on rough, really rough country. But and the big, hearty tractor, of course, it had to winch its load a good deal. It couldn't remain hooked up as we did. It winched its load a good deal on difficult country. But of course it put up a very fine show on the return run from Wall to Farnborough.
On road?
Yes. Yes, of course all the wheel machines did that, and the half tracks were fair performers at that.
Couple of spellings I wanted to check with you. Kegress, K-E-G-R-E-S-S-E.
Right.
And Burford, B-U-R-F-O-R-D.
That's right. As a historical record, we might do.
Yes.
Well, whilst I was at Farnborough, two load carriers were manufactured by Vickers. They were designed by a very clever man called Ingleby, and they were big machines with big wheel suspensions, but all the wheels were driven. The transmissions were therefore complicated, and as all the wheels were steered, the job of steering them was hard work, because we had no servo systems in those days. The tracks were novel in that they were built up from ballata belting with rubber blocks attached to them and were completely silent. The machine, of course, could only take corners. It could take, the machine could only turn on a fairly wide radius. Skid turns are not possible. But they demonstrated, among other things, the possibilities of the big wheel suspension before it was actually imported from America. But the machines made no progress, as they were not a suitable product for infantry load carrying.
In what particular respect were they defective?
Complication. Far too complicated, and the tracks needed a lot of maintenance to keep them together. They were all bolted, of bolted construction, and bolts and things rattle loose when you run fast on roads.
Just another spelling check. Bellata, B-E-L-L-A-T-A?
No, B-A-L-A-T-A.
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 Were there any more odd machines which came through your hands?
Well, there was a small version of the Armstrong's Dragon. It was meant for, I think, intended for light artillery haulage or anti-tank guns, but I think there was no real use for it, and consequently, whilst we ran it about a bit, and it was quite a reliable little machine, no sort of serious life tests were undertaken, and it just died a natural death.
Now, in 1925, you left the service to take up an appointment at Woolwich Arsenal.
Yes.
Why did you decide to leave?
The engineer branch of the tank corps was disbanded, and I took the various options open to us. And I chose to leave the service because I had just married then. My wife wasn't fit to go to a hot climate, and I knew I should be due for posting to India if I were to join the fighting side. So I came out and was thereupon offered an appointment at Woolwich Arsenal by Director of Artillery.
Did the end of the engineering department indicate that there was less and less original engineering work going on within the service itself?
No, the whole responsibility for tank engineering was transferred to the Royal Army Ordnance Corps.
When you went to Woolwich Arsenal in 25...
26.
How many sections or departments within the arsenal were concerned with tank matters?
Well, some tanks were being... taking from the design side first, the superintendent of design had one section devoted to tank design. Manufacture was in the Royal Carriage Factories, and inspection was in a section of the inspection department, Inspectorate of Armaments, known as the Inspectorate of Tanks. And we undertook the inspection of vehicles in the field from the performance and maintenance and design aspect, and, of course, the inspection during new manufacture. Mm.
What was the proportion of design and manufacture going on at Woolwich as compared with the proportion that was going on within civilian companies?
The greater part of the design work for the actual vehicle itself was done outside. The design department automatically took on problems of armament concerned what we call turretry.
I see. The name of your department at Woolwich was what?
Armaments Inspection Department.
And what sort of resources and facilities and personnel were in the department?
Well, we had civilian staff. There were civilian staff of inspectors. They were men who had been trained in various trades, electricians, fitters, turners and such like. And there was an office run by a principal writer, I think he called himself in those days. He'd now be a higher clerical officer, I think, according to your reckoning. Then it was officered or managed by military and civilian officers in, I suppose, roughly about equal proportions.
And in comparable seniority?
Oh, yes. Yes, we, like a rank of assistant, were a gang of us called assistant inspectors. Well, we were military and civil. We all got much about the same money, and we were overruled by a man. He was a major, that's a major's rank.
Now, let's talk about your duties as an assistant inspector. I'd like to break them down into the two areas you've mentioned. Yeah. One, the inspection of tanks and tractors in the field, and two, the inspection of newly manufactured machines. Take the inspection of tanks and tractors in the field.
Yes.
Tell me about some of the jobs you had.
Well, we visited units when they were newly equipped with tanks or artillery tractors to find out how they were getting on. And as is inevitable, when the user gets hold of a new machine, be it car, motor, lawnmower, or anything else, he always comes up against problems which are not foreseen by the original designer. And we found that out, and were able to bring the information back on either ourselves to design modifications or else get the manufacturer of the original product to do the same thing.
Could you tell me about particular machines and particular problems you found with them during this period?
We had I suppose one of our bigger problems was the steering problems associated with tank steering. The wear on brakes and clutches was very heavy, and we sort of put some trouble to get over these. We had not at that time devised a positive and definite steering method, and so we had to do with the ordinary clutch and brake skid steering, and it was a very subject of very heavy wear, and we were sort of driven to all sorts of schemes and devices to make life easier.
For example?
Well, it was brake linings were one of our great problems. To get a really durable brake lining which would last a long time. But of course, there was a good deal of civilian competition for that trade, which was a lucrative one. And the makers of brake linings weren't slow to come up with very good products, some of them.
Could you specify particular problems you had to deal with, and once having identified them, explain to me how you dealt with them? If you could relate this to particular events, that would be helpful.
Yes. Now, we bought some two-man tanks fitted with Meadows engines originally, and it was decided to replace them with a Rolls-Royce power unit It was actually a small Rolls-Royce car engine we used, but coupled to a Wilson self-change gearbox. That's the same thing as they use in a London bus nowadays. Well, now, when we did that, the brake gear inside the self-change gearbox had to fulfill the duties in one gear of an engine clutch. As a result of that, we had extensive failures of the part equivalent in the ordinary car to a clutch shaft. We overcame the difficulty by reducing the frictional grip of the brake in first gear and altering the lubricant we used in the gearbox. That's a sort of specific thing.
Now, that's one problem where you came up with the solution yourself. Yes. Without recourse to the manufacturer. Presumably there were some problems which you could only get solved by recourse to the manufacturer. Could you tell me about
Yes.
any of those?
In the Armstrong Siddeley, a 90-horsepower air-cooled engine, which was so widely used as a power unit in tanks and dragons, we ran into a series of piston failures. And the cause was found to be inadequate cooling, because the drivers would hang on in top gear instead of changing down, letting the engine run faster and the cooling fan to blow harder. But we had to get a piston to improve durability, and Armstrong Siddeley Motors then came up with, instead of a cast aluminium piston, they came up with a forged aluminium piston, which was a much better job all round. But that was a job which only a manufacturer could solve.
Did you find that manufacturers were always efficient and effective in implementing necessary changes, or were there inordinate delays at all?
Well, if a new, for instance, if a change became necessary and there was a new order for the vehicle in the offing, they were pretty quick to change their designs and bring them up to date. But in case of vehicles already in service which are not being perpetuated, we so often designed our alterations ourselves and went to tender for the bits and pieces, and they were fitted by the ordnance workshops.
Now, as regards the aspect of your job that was concerned with inspecting newly manufactured equipment, what kind of machines came through your hands?
Well, I was responsible for engine, transmission and electrical gear for fighting vehicles. And of course it ranged from everything like the 350 horsepower engine for the independent tank down to the Ford four-cylinder engine, which was used in a small carrier. And it included straightforward gearboxes and transmissions of the Wilson self-change type, and one or two experimental units, which I think are probably lost in the mists of antiquity by now.
Right. Now, let's concentrate on some of these machines. Mm. What I'm interested in is where you inspected them and the extent of the tests that you carried out on them.
Well, the principal venues of my duties as an inspector of new machinery lay in Coventry, Sheffield, and Newcastle-on-Tyne. I had a certain amount of work in Birmingham. The inspection of a new component or a new component followed the accepted engineering procedure. A material was specified, purchased, material tests were taken, and then it was fabricated into a component which was measured for accuracy, finish, and fit with other parts. Finally, all those bits and pieces became a complete assembly, and they underwent some sort of, in the case of an engine or gearbox, a running test to prove that they would transmit the power they were designed to transmit, or develop the power they were designed to develop, and we could be sure of a reasonable endurance. For instance, in engine testing, we used to explore the boundaries of the power which could be developed, and then run an endurance run on the first engine of up to 100 hours at various increments of power, finally dismantling.